everybody to the Trademark Happy Hour, featuring me, Danny, I mean, Brandon Colley. Danny is away. Danny is at, there you go, Matt. Thanks, man. Danny is hanging out at Cactus Con with so many of our good friends. And so you're stuck with me and my co-hosts, Jake, Hildreth, .. Lakeith Collins, Bruiser 79, and our wonderful guest, who apparently does not listen to our stream because they graciously agreed to come on. Leslie Carhart is with us. Come on. Hi, Leslie. Dang it. I'm getting an echo. Somebody's giving an echo.
Now we need to keep talking so that way we get echo. Knock your echo out, Brandon.
There. I fixed it. Maybe. Okay.
Maybe. I guess we'll see.
Okay. Everybody else, somebody else say something. Lakeith, what's up?
Not a whole lot, man. Just living the dream. How about you?
I'm also living a dream. Yep. Thanks, Matt. Sorry. I don't know what's going on with my... Half my sound goes through speakers. Half my sound goes through this. So, my bad. Leslie, thank you so much for being here. So... We wanted to just kind of start off, in case anybody has been living under a rock for the last several years. Can you just give us a brief introduction of who you are, where you've come from?
I don't know. I might have been living under a rock for a few years, so whatever. But like, I'm Leslie. Nice to meet you. If I haven't met you, I'm pretty noisy, though, so people kind of know who I am. I am a digital forensics incident response professional. I've been doing that for way too long, and I've been in IT for about 25, I don't even know how many years, long time. Let's see, I done some stuff. Right now I do industrial cybersecurity, so I do incident response for things like power plants and water treatment plants, manufacturing, oil and gas, stuff like that, so that's kind of neat. And let's see, I fixed airplanes, I fixed telephones, I soldered a bunch of stuff. Like, I was in the Air Force for a while, retired from the reserves, and I teach for SANS. So I did a lot of stuff. A few things.
Can we go back to fixed airplanes for a second?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was a dumb teenage hacker. I was a real dumb teenage hacker. And I thought I had it all figured out when I was like 15, 16 years old.
Sure.
And then the dot-com bubble burst. A lot of you weren't alive for that. I think that most of the people on the stream were alive for that. But if you weren't alive for that yet, there was this moment in history where we thought that tech was going to be the be-all, end-all. And then all of a sudden we realized it wasn't the be-all, end-all. And then all the companies that were the first internet companies facing the world went under, except for like Amazon, and so I didn't have a lot of choices after that. I was like, I'm a dumb hacker, and I didn't pay attention in school, so I enlisted in the Air Force, and my first day at a basic training was 9/11, and I did life really well. I've done life really well. I know a lot of things because I screwed everything up, and let's see. So I enlisted, and they were like, hey, you want to be like medical? You want to be like a secretary? Is like, no, I want computers. And they're like, oh. And it's like 2001, and they're like, oh, well, you can solder airplane parts. They got computers. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I went to like a year of A&P school, and I learned all about planes. And I did that for a while until I realized it kind of sucked, like being outside in a blizzard on top of a slippery airplane, you know, just not the best thing in the world. So
Does that give you any insight into which planes not to fly on now?
You know, honestly, it's really safe to fly. It's surprisingly safe. Boeing's trying to crush my usual mantra there. I'm really right. Disappointed in them. But, yeah. You know, generally, it's much safer to fly than it is to you know, drive somewhere or, you know, take a motorcycle, whatever, or walk in a city, you know. But... Yeah. Yeah, you know, it gives me a lot of insight into how things really run behind the scenes in terms of how many things are usually broken on the aircraft we fly on, so.
Kind of like working in security, right?
Yeah, it's good to know how broken the world is.
Exactly how much gum and tape is just holding everything together. Yeah.
Pretty much.
For sure. So, dreams.
So, Leslie, from the Air Force, what would you call kind of your first gig into cybersecurity then?
I did odd jobs. I had a really hard time getting back into security. I mean, I did, you know, computery things as a profession in the 90s and, you know, was kind of involved in the hackery community, but it was hard. You know, I didn't look right to be a cool hacker. You know, I didn't look like the kind of person that they wanted to be a hacker in early 2000s. And I interviewed for a lot of jobs. I tried to find mentorship and nobody would talk to me. And you know, it was rough. It took a long time. I did a lot of odd jobs in tech, you know, and they were all interesting. They all taught me things that made me a better security person. But it's the reason why I work so hard to mentor people and give people educational resources now, because nobody helped me out. It was very, very difficult. I finally got a job in a SOC around 2007, and then I was able to move forward from there, but it took a while. It was difficult.
Is that why you're, I mean, you kind of touched on that too. Is that why you are so passionate about giving back, even like you were talking about working over the weekends before the stream started, yet you have time on your schedule on a weekly basis to basically give to people to help them out with breaking into cybersecurity?
And anybody else, especially for arbitrary reasons, like you don't look like the person we expect to be a computer hacker, or you don't have the right background, you didn't go to the right school. Like, I don't want that to happen to anybody else. It pisses me off. It should never happen. So yeah, that's why I do that.
Nice.
It's awesome. It's always saddens me when I see you posting yet another no call, no show, you know, and it's like, someone is giving their time to you. You show up early. You're thankful. Like, I don't understand it. So do you tend to recognize any sort of trends among the people that no call, no show with you? Just random
business on the internet. You know, I have such an interesting mix of mentees. And just for the audience, if you don't know, I got a Calendly and I let people sign up. I don't have dedicated mentor people. Like, there's too many people who need help. So what I do is I open up my calendar for my free time, mostly on the weekends. And I say, you know, you can just go to my social media, click on the link and sign up for half an hour with me. And I see more people that way, and I'm able to help some people who maybe can't find a dedicated mentor that way. But yeah, I mean, like, I get a mix of people who come to the sessions. It's everybody from, you know, CISOs who are thinking about a career change to people who are in high school and maybe kind of thinking about cybersecurity. And I've done a lot of stuff and I've screwed up a lot of things, so I'm usually able to help people somehow, or at least tell them where to go. But the people who just don't show up, yeah, that sucks. It sucks, you know, and I teach kids too. I coach martial arts, things like that. And it's the same thing. Like, sometimes people just don't know yet that people's time has value and that they're taking away something from other people who could have taken advantage of that opportunity. So it's frustrating, especially after, you know, giving up all of my free time pretty much to do stuff like that. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. That's just the internet. That's just human nature.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunately, still sucks.
Internet's gonna internet, right? So let's I kind of want to shift a little bit to a little bit of the operational technology stuff that you've been in for several years now, and it's kind of hit the news over the last, I don't know, a couple weeks with the whole, and I don't even know if it's Russia or China or both that are going to shut down our power grid, right? Like, so do you want to speak to that at all, or do you want to just leave that out there for the newscasters to cover?
I can talk about that. You know, I've been in non-standard IT technology for, you know, 15 years or so. And all right, so here's the deal. First of all, nobody's going to take down the power grid because there's multiple power grids. There's three of them that serve America. It's Texas, East, and West. And, you know, so first of all, nobody's going to take down the power grid. We are a hodgepodge, a quilt of different transmission, distribution, and generation providers all over the United States that somehow manage together. It's really actually quite amazing that all of these little utilities all over the place are able to function together. A miracle of regulation and system integration. But yeah, I mean, the effort needed to take down most industrial processes, it requires knowledge of the process. There's a lot of safety controls built into industrial processes to keep human error and parts failure from causing catastrophic events. So if you want to be the evil bad guy and you want to hack into something and do something bad to it, you got to know about all the safety controls and human controls and the things that prevent everyday maintenance disasters from happening. So you've got to have that expertise. And then, you know, that's a big resource. That's a big lift to begin with. And adversaries are spending a lot of time and money getting better at that and learning about environments so they can do stuff in the future. But you're not going to have the resources to go into every little tiny utility at once. Now, can you do something strategic and targeted? Yeah, you can think about, hey, which city would have the most impacts, things like that. But that's a much more complex issue than, oh, the big nefarious unnamed evil is going to take down the U.S. grid. That's complicated than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so something you said about that dedication to learning the product, it got me thinking about some of like the age of the products that are out there that serve these manufacturing or these electrical systems and stuff. Do you think that because they don't tend to get the same kind of updates and they don't patch the CVEs that are out for them and stuff like that, that makes them, like, as they continue to age, they're a bigger target? Or is that not necessarily a true fact, that they're not patched or that they're not maintained well?
So there's a lot of legacy. I deal with Windows NT all the time. And I deal with all kinds of different industrial verticals, manufacturing, water, power, oil, gas, trains, aircraft, things like that. So across all sorts of industrial technologies and IoT technologies of that, of course, there's old stuff because there's long maintenance periods. And you buy things as a system that functions together and you can't just pull a part out and hope that it works. I mean, that's when people die. You can't just be like, I'm going to swap in Windows 11. What if that destroys an integration component that fails 5 years from now and then the power goes out? You can't do that. Everything has to be vetted. Everything has to be tested. You know, it's a long process to replace things and it has to be vetted by the vendors, things like that. So yes, it takes a long time to replace things. But again, let's go back to this holistic process thing. It's hard to break things in these processes. Individual CVEs, PLCs, the computers, the simple computers that run industrial processes, they're vulnerable. They're unencrypted. You tell them to do things and they do them. Like, there's some basic security controls on some of the newer things, but like basically tell them to do things and they do stuff. So I don't really care about individual vulnerabilities on them. It's good to know about them. Vulnerability management is important, but what matters is, can somebody impact the whole process? Can they turn the lights on or off? Can they make the water toxic? Can they contaminate the environment? Can they set the building on fire? And that involves knowing how all the pieces fit together and then starting to think about vulnerabilities and what's mitigated and what's not. So again, it's complicated. It's an interesting space to be blue team and red team.
Oh yeah, I would imagine. Oh, thanks, Jake.
This discussion just made me think of that video and I can drop that in chat if I want, or if you want, or not. Leslie, I'll let you decide.
That's fine. I mean, it's on my YouTube, so that's fine.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was not. So I came from a small municipality where we had our IT network, and then we had an OT network handling a wastewater plant and a water plant and an electrical distribution, right? So, like, I was vaguely aware of all this stuff, and they tried to explain to me, like, it's not the same. Like, you just you send a packet to a port and things happen, and I'm like, what how is that? And yeah, it's completely different. It's so bizarre. So yeah,
different world. And I get frustrated with people who are like, oh, you can just take an IT person, incident responder, pen test, or whatever product and plop it into OT. No, you can't. It's completely different. Everything's different. Very, very different world to work in, but it's very important.
Is there any... I guess I assume that there are moving towards more of a secured state for everything, or is it sort of this is just the way the world is and we're going to keep rolling with it, it's working? Like,
things are getting better. It depends on the vertical. Now, everybody talks about power, because I'll tell you why everybody talks about electric power, because it's the only thing that we in our privileged lives in America, not everybody has that background, but most people here do, are used to having fail. So we're used to, we know what it looks like when the power goes out. We don't know what it looks like when the sewage system doesn't work for 3 weeks. We don't know what it looks like when our trains stop running for across a huge geographic area for weeks at a time. We don't know what that looks like. So in other countries, they do. In other places in the world, even in North America, they do know what that's like. But we always talk about the power because we know what a power outage looks like. So it's the most familiar thing in our brains. But I mean, certain industrial verticals are more secured than others. Like, water is scary because they have no resources. It's municipal. They have, like, you were from that background. Like, there's like a couple IT people. There's definitely no like dedicated cybersecurity team. Like, you're doing what you can with the little resources you have. Power, you know, especially like power generation, like some of those utilities can be much better resourced. They can be big companies. Oil and gas is generally very well resourced. It depends. People are trying, though. They're aware of these issues. They make the news. There is concern. And people are trying to improve things. But you have to do mitigating controls in a very, very different way in OT. And it takes time and patience and a lot of creativity, because it's more about architecture and like passive monitoring instead of active tools. No XDR, no cool agents. The tools we're used to, no cool forensics tools we're used to now today in our IT environments. You've got to work around all that stuff. And it's challenging. You can still do those important things like monitoring and vulnerability management. You can do pen tests. You can do all that stuff. But in a lot of cases, it's just building basic architecture to try to segment off the really sensitive stuff and then be able to monitor it.
It was interesting. So the reason I'm in security now is because at the end of 2020, we had recently gotten an OT security assessment, and they had handled everything. And then I started doing research to do an assessment of the IT network. And one of the companies we talked to was the company that assessed the OT network. And they said the way that they do their assessments is basically just packet capture. Everywhere, you know, multiple places, packet capture, process it all back at their place and find stuff that's bad. And I was like, that doesn't make sense to me at all in an IT network. But it, from what you're describing, like, you have to do it that way or you're going to blow everything up, basically.
Complicated again than that. Like, newer OT technology probably has a fully formed protocol stack. You probably have better established network infrastructure that's not going to get tanked out by too much data, maybe better resource computers today. But where you do not know, or where you're not positive that you know, you can tank things out. You're talking about embedded XP of memory, like things that don't have fully fledged TCP/IP implemented. Like, yeah, you send an open connection and you don't send a close, they don't know what to do. So yes, active scanning things, especially aggressively active scanning things in your industrial network, very, very risky. And people want to do it now because we're so used to our modern tools. It's a challenge for me to hire people because people are so dependent on XDR and active vulnerability scanning, things like that, that we're so used to today. But we have to be very judicious in the use of those tools. And if we are going to do any type of active scanning, it has to be like during a maintenance window where everything's going to get vetted before it gets turned back on, or on a digital twin system. Like, it's complicated. It's difficult to do anything other than the passive analysis. So we have lots of scanning and passive analysis. So a lot of packet captures.
Gotcha. So does that make IR any easier since you've already got packet capturing going on? I can see by that face that the answer is
no. I mean, like, I wish everybody just had, you know, running packet capture utilities on things. Usually it's, you know, go stick something on a span port for a little while and collect something. And a lot of monitoring tools are just collecting metadata on packets, so they're not collecting full packet captures. When you can get it, it's great, it's wonderful. But I work with everything, you know. I really, this is the job in IR you get into when you just want complete and utter unexpected chaos. Like, maybe today I have to find a forensics tool that will run on this Windows NT box that has a non-standard hard drive interface. Maybe I have to solder a connector. And maybe tomorrow I'll be working on a modern Dell laptop, you know, or figuring out an embedded controller from 1988. You know, it's just a total mixed bag, and I just have to roll with the punches.
So you said 1988. Is that the oldest you have seen, or tell me your oldest gear you've had to deal with?
I don't know. I deal with a lot of old stuff. Really the oldest. Definitely 80s. But there's a lot of things that are like behind protocol converters, like serial to Ethernet converters that might be older than that.
Sure.
And it's so old that it doesn't tell you. Like, it doesn't, it's too old to have the metadata that would tell you what year it was made unless you go walk up to it. So I don't know. Yeah.
Gotcha. So it sounds... go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to say, it sounds very, like, very, very old school, like, how hacking used to be, right? So I want to kind of transition because I want to make sure we talk about pancakes. So old school hacking, hacks for pancakes, where did that come from?
Self-deprecating humor. It's like a sofa for pizza. I do a lot of this stuff. I do a lot of B-sides and things. Like it's not really a lucrative profession. The outside work things that I do.
So, when you created the Hacks for Pancakes handle, do you just really like pancakes?
Food in general, you know, it just like a good idea at the time. I'm a big fan of food, you know, and most of the time with the volunteer stuff I'm doing, I get compensated in food and booze, so.
Do you get some exposure too? Like compensated in exposure?
I get exposure. Love that. Yeah, I get exposure. Yeah. Yes, so everybody knows who I am.
Yep. Playing in bands when I was, in my early 20s, like getting paid in beer used to be the greatest thing. And now if somebody tried to pay me in beer, I'd be like, what?
Pretty much.
There was just an episode of the Big Bang Theory where Sheldon was trying to figure out like how it works that they help you move for all day and then all you get in return is pizza. He was like, no, this isn't how it works. okay, so PancakesCon. This was the brainchild. Well, obviously, it's at least in part yours, if not holistically yours. We're getting ready to go into PancakesCon 5. What did it look like at number one? Like, where did that all come out of?
Shock. It was the first day of lockdown in the United States during the pandemic, and we're like, what now? Like, I think everybody remembers that. I know it was like 5 years ago, but like, I think everybody remembers that moment of like, what do we do now? And me and my friends were like, let's have a con and let's run it like tomorrow. And so like, well, actually like next week. And like, so we organized a con in 1 week. We're like, we're going to do a virtual con. We're going to run it over Zoom. We'll figure out OBS somehow. And we're going to put out a CFP right now because nobody has anything to do. Nobody has anything to do right now. Like, seriously. And it worked. We got like 100 submissions for our con. And then we had like 6,000 people tune into Twitch. Like, it was crazy. And then like they wanted again. Like I was just gonna do it one time just cause like we were all like in shock and like didn't know what to do during lockdown. But then the next year we were still kind of like locked down. A lot of cons weren't running. So everybody was like, hey, can you run it again? And I'm like, okay. And then year three, they were like, well, but we want it again. And now it's year five and I'm running this con with this silly name. And I guess it's a thing now. I guess I have to keep doing it, but. So anyway, it's a virtual con. We still run it over, you know, OBS to Twitch and to YouTube, and it's free. And we get speakers to speak on two different topics. And one of the halves of the talk has to be like a junior level InfoSec talk, educational. And the other half has to be something that is not related to IT at all. So it has to be like a hobby, like food or working out or music or whatever. Something that is not related to sitting in front of your computer because people's attention span is short. and that keeps them focused on learning because then they get a little break every half hour.
When you did the first one, did you expect that there would be a second or a third or a fourth or a fifth? No, it was just that one.
I would have named it something so much better. Like, I don't even know like how the conversation started. It was just like, I don't know, guys. The world may end now. Let's we can't buy any toilet paper. Let's have an InfoSec con. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what the logic was there. We were just like all under tremendous stress, and we just like we took a week off work and we just like organized a con. It was crazy.
That's wild.
I was just talking to my wife over lunch about Cactus Con was going on. And then I said, well, we're talking to Leslie who put on Pancakes Con. And she goes, do you just put any word in front of con and it's like it becomes a conference? And so we were joking, and I'm like, Pajama Pants Con. And I'm like, that's actually not a bad idea. So
we need to make that happen.
Sounds really good, actually.
Brandon and I actually met because of Pancakes Con 3. I don't know if you're aware of this. Yeah, so I had seen the agenda posted somewhere, and I knew that Trimark was going to be hiring soon. So I'm looking through the agenda, and I'm like, I can take a Sunday and just watch some people talk. I was like, oh, this Hack Yourself one seems interesting. And so I did a little OSINT on Brandon and figured out some stuff about him, and we started talking. And what, a month later, you were hired? Something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think I had just started putting feelers out for jobs around that time. And that was, Pancakes Con was kind of my first conference talk. I'd kind of given internal talks to people before, but mostly they weren't security related. And so that whole talk was basically me screwing around in production and running... running like safe-ish hacks on ourselves. And I found, I remember that one of the things I found was our default domain administrator account had a SPN on it and its password hadn't changed in, I don't know, probably since it was created. And I, like, as a sysadmin at the time, I had no idea what that meant. Like, you know, fast forward 2 years later and I tell way too many people that that's a bad idea on a daily basis. So, but yes, it was all kind of the catalyst of it was of everything is kind of started with Pancakes Con for us. And another thing I wanted to say about that was, so my talk and Robert's talk. So Leslie's, I don't know if it's direct supervisor or what exactly we looked up. Robert, is it Lee, correct?
Yeah.
And so he talked at the same time that I talked. So this person that everyone's familiar with and this person that no one's familiar with, but we both jumped in like the green room channel right before you kind of go on at the same time, and we just got to talk for like 2 minutes. And he's like, oh, this is your first talk. He goes, I'm going to tell everybody to go to yours instead.
He did.
And I thought, oh, that's nice of you to say. And he did. Yeah.
he absolutely did. I didn't worry about that too much. Like, I don't have like one, there's two tracks at Pancakes Con, and I don't have, like, one track that's like more established people and less established people. Like, it's just like, I try to alternate topics so that people can head towards either the hobby or the InfoSec topic that their interests them more, and hopefully they get hooked and they switch between the tracks. Like, but I apologize for that. That's rough. And it was so sweet of him to do that.
It was very, very, very cool.
Are you aware of why the beard is gone now? I'm a beard connoisseur, but
I don't want to speak for Rob, but I think I can say he is serious business Rob now. So it's how he wishes to present himself currently. So It's tough being part of a growing company, right? So, like, you know, it's a lot of responsibility.
Understandable. Cool.
We didn't realize there was such a handsome face underneath the big red beard.
Well, I was in the Air Force with him, but it still looks pretty baby-faced to me.
So how can people get involved with Pancakes Con? We saw that the CFP is open until Oh, we'll talk about the CFP closing date later. But how else can people get involved?
So we do accept sponsors for mostly like gifts for junior people. So like books, Humble Bundles, things like that, little things that can be shipped. Like we have got some great sponsors have been announced this weekend, but little things that could be useful to a more junior person in their career growth. And we do raffles and we do some prizes for our CTF, things like that. So we're very, very happy to accept those types of like donations, not necessarily money donations, because we're not an established nonprofit. I don't want to do it. If people want to help out with little things like that, like a Humble Bundle, we love that. Send us an email. And then volunteers, we can always use more volunteers to help herd the cats on the day of. It's a huge logistic effort to make it run, like between the AV team that's keeping two tracks running and getting speakers from point A to point B, to the people who are monitoring the chat, answering questions, things like that. It's a lot of people. It's not just me. It's a lot of people, like 30 something people behind the scenes making it go. So
wow. So do you have a contact form up on pancakescon.com that people
do
can...
the Wait. volunteer form? There is a villages call for villages open, and there's a call for papers open.
Do we want to get into the call for papers discussion right now, guys?
I want Lakeith to lead this conversation.
You want me to lead the call for papers conversation?
No, it's the call for papers, it closes this Sunday.
Yes. Okay. So this Sunday, you say, but
Sunday.
Not next Sunday.
This coming Sunday.
See? They threw in the this coming, which is context. What I said. Yes. So we got into a big discussion about this coming, when do you change from this to next, etc., during our planning meeting earlier today. Like, if it's a Monday and you say this Sunday, is that yesterday or is that the following Sunday?
Say that's the following Sunday.
Okay.
Because I'm always looking forward to the next weekend. That's how
that's
I
a great way.
That's right.
So if it was a Wednesday and I said this Tuesday, no weekend involved.
Yeah, I don't know then. I don't know. I wouldn't say that.
I don't know. I also would not say that. You start saying this coming or this past or yeah, something along those lines. Okay. That's all. So yeah, to be clear though, the 18th, Sunday, February 18th is when CFP closes. Okay.
Please get your submissions in. Like, and don't feel like we have a CFP mentorship channel in Slack. Join our Slack, like, or talk on the Trimark Discord. You know, ask people about your submissions. It's for junior people. You are a good qualified person to give a talk. Get your submissions in. And we want to hear about all your interesting hobbies, too, like whether it's cooking or a sport or craft. Whatever it is, you know, there's as long as it's like relatively PG-13, we want to hear about it. Like, and people want to hear about it. So get your talk submissions in, seriously.
I loved L Armageddon's talk keynote, mixing in salads. And I was just like, this is so entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our keynote this year is Deviant, and he's going to talk about sushi rolls as well as lockpicking. So it's going to be fabulous.
Do we assume that Brandon's hobby talk was about brewing?
Oh, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
No. Uh-oh. Do you remember what it was, Jake?
Of course. Magic tricks, man.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a...
Magic tricks?
I showed... Yeah, it was card magic.
It was legitimately one of my favorite ones. And I hate picking favorites, but like there's things that I know nothing about and I learn about them during PancakesCon when I'm doing like the AV side of things. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know anything about card tricks. Like...
It was cool. I did a pancakes related card trick. So I think it's on YouTube still.
They're all on our YouTube. Mm-hmm. By year.
So yes, if they let me talk, yeah, they'll let pretty much anybody talk.
That's true. Yep.
Thanks.
So you have a CTF going on.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, it's Sans running the CTF. Is that correct?
No, it's a different entity running it. I'm going to announce our sponsors soon.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind then. We won't bring that up.
But it does start.
What we can get, I'll say that. Like, with everything that goes into PancakesCon, from the prizes to the CTF to the villages to the volunteers, every moment of that is people's donated time and money. Like, there is not a single central budget for this con. Every bit of it is, like, me going out there on the internet and saying, hey, I want to run a con, and I want to make it free, and I want to stream it to everything so that everybody around the world can watch it. Can you help me out? Like, that's the con. That's the con. That's all of it. Like, so I take, in terms of villages and CTFs, I take what I can get that I can vet that it's going to be good quality enough for the people attending, but pretty much what I can get.
Okay. And so I assume villages, you said, would be announced at the same time? Awesome.
Yep, next week when we announce the talks. And I can tell you right now, there's going to be a hardware hacking. There's going to be a lock picking, you know, typical HackerCon things.
Sure. Cool. Things that can also translate somewhat over the... over remote. Yeah.
That's so cool. I've not thought about doing lock picking over the web. I've tried it hands-on before. I don't know if I could do it without having hands-on. I couldn't do it with my hands on it. I don't know.
Well, that's kind of a bring-your-own-lockpick situation.
Yeah.
Observe other people or bring your own lockpicks and follow along. So.
Absolutely. So, what else with PancakesCon? I think we touched on most of it. Did we miss anything?
Yeah.
No, I mean, just like, help out if you can. Like, seriously, again, like I say, like, it is a labor of love for the community, and it's accessible because it's remote for people who have health issues or who are in remote places around the world. So if you can help somehow, please help. Like, nobody's making money off of this. I lose a bunch of money every year doing this. So please help out if you can, so we can give something back.
Okay. I wish I could speak. I will be traveling that day. I am sorry.
It's okay.
So what else do you have coming up for yourself other than PancakesCon? Is that pretty much it for the time being?
I'll be speaking a couple places around the world. I hope I can announce these. I'm going to be on a speaking circuit around Australia in May for a large portion of May. I'll also be speaking at RSA with Bryson Bort in May. So those are on the schedule. I'll be speaking at the Southeast Cyber Summit in a few weeks, so that'll be another one that people can attend if they like. And then I will be at Christchurch B-Sides in New Zealand in the fall. So just a few of the ones that I'm doing a lot of world tour this year, so I hope I get to see some people I haven't gotten to meet in person.
Amazing. Before. So is that one of the things that I've seen you talk about before is having an agent to get you speaking gigs? Is that Australian thing kind of part of that, or is that, are you able to talk about that, or is that not something you can talk about?
I can talk about having an agent. I don't feel comfortable saying which things come out of that and which things don't come out of that. It's you know, contractual things like that. But like, I recommend that if you enjoy speaking, you do a couple things. You first of all do something to improve your speaking skill. So either a college class, or I'm in a Toastmasters chapter, and I think that's fantastic. I recommend Toastmasters highly. So find something to formally build your education in public speaking, and then just speak a lot. That's really the trick to it. Speak at smaller things, speak at your meetups, speak at B-sides, and get that experience under your belt so you have a portfolio, especially on YouTube. And at that point, you can start applying for an agent. And that's a wonderful way to get more corporate speaking gigs that can supplement the other things you're doing. So very good thing to consider, but there is some preparatory work, a couple of years of preparatory work that are really necessary to succeed at it.
That was a question we had, was whether this is, you know, does the agent kind of filter out the crap jobs, for lack of a better term, or is it, you know, why you would want to go that way, I guess, but.
If you speak around the world, especially, the logistic challenges of it get a little bit too much for an individual to handle. And that includes tax forms. Everything is 1099 work. that's a hefty lift, you know, making sure that you pay your estimated taxes. And then also the travel logistics, planning and doing the contracts, all the legal paperwork. So if you wanted to go it alone, you'd need to make sure you had like a dedicated human tax professional and a lawyer to look over every contract, separate accounts. So it's a lot more logistical and time effort spent to do speaking extensively on your own than it is to pay a commission to an agency who handles all of that stuff for you. So they get a percentile of the talk, but then they give you one 1099 at the end of the year, and you know how much you're going to owe. You can plan out your taxes. You get your travel arranged for you. You know that some things are being vetted. They're sending you things. They're handling the contract signatures and the legal. All of that is handled for you. So if you really want to do it a lot more than like twice a year, it's very, very wise to get an agent.
Okay, good to know. What, when you started speaking, were you, I guess, how frightened are you still when you go to get up on stage?
Bothering me at all.
Okay.
Like, I got on this podcast, like, I'm just like, yeah, let's go talk to some people. I get nervous afterwards. So the secret is I get nervous afterwards. I always finish a talk and I'm like, I don't get nervous sing for it and building the deck and getting up there and speaking. It's all fun. And then like 5 minutes afterward, I'm like, I did terribly. They're going to hate me. Every single time I give a talk, like, I think I did horribly. I can't even watch myself on YouTube afterwards. So yeah, that's how it hits me. But like, I have no trouble doing it. I'm like, yeah, let's go, hold my beer and watch this. And like, then afterwards I'm like, wow, that sounded awful. My accent is terrible. I should have worn different shoes.
Comfortable shoes on stage is important. I found that. That's very true. Actually, comfortable shoes for an entire conference, super important.
Definitely. Dealing
with plantar fasciitis right now, and like, it got so bad at Wild West Hackenfest. I, you know, we ran into each other again at Wild West Hackenfest. I was like, I wasn't letting on, but definitely standing behind a booth was not happening at that point.
Not to do a product endorsement, but I recommend buy some nice Skechers, buy some nice orthopedic Skechers for your conference shoes. That's served me very, very well, because they've got nice looking like dress shoes that are also orthopedic. Okay. So
yeah, my wife bought me a pair of Hoka slides.
Oh, Hokas are nice.
I wear around the house all the time. They're on my feet as we speak. Yep. Since I am standing up. So yeah, that's, yeah.
Invest in comfortable dress shoes. That's an important rule for life for the young people out there.
I bought some Doc Martens that were like the buy it for life kind of Doc Martens. You can actually send them back every 2 years or whatever and get them resold and all that stuff. Those are not the comfortable dress shoes you want. I will tell you that they are.
Docs are not comfortable.
No.
And they come in like weird sizes. Like, they're off by like half a size. Like, it's not a good choice. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how we got on shoes, but it's very important. It's very important, kids.
So it is. It's like there are a few things in life that you should spend the money on, right? Shoes, your mattress, carpet in the house, probably. Like, that, like, I'm in my living room a lot, and this is right now the carpet sucks.
You got half of it. You missed pillows.
Pillows, yes.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
It's something I invested on in my 40s is washable everything, like washable couch, washable rugs. Like, that's a really good one too. Like, a little bit more money and I can throw everything in the washing machine and then it gets clean. Pretty nice, especially if pet.
Yeah, we have our couches are that cashmere fabric or whatever. And the guy showed us in the showroom, like, oh, you could spill this on and you can wipe it right off. And I didn't believe. And then we had a kid. And oh, I could just wipe everything off. Fantastic.
Listen, we know, everybody. We know the things to invest money in. Like, yeah, shoes are up there. Shoes, a good pair of shoes. It's like a Terry Pratchett, you know, like, you know, only the rich can live truly cheaply because they can invest in such good boots that they last a lifetime. You know, I remember that keenly from one of the books, one of the characters thinking of that, so.
Yeah, boost theory is awesome. Brandon, do you have any more questions that you had that you wanted to?
I think we pretty much hit through everything. But I did think, so we usually close with the wins of the week, which is just something good or even something terrible. What, it doesn't have to be a win. But before we do that, I already said what my hidden talent was with the card tricks. So I kind of want to hear it. So like Lakeith, if you were to speak at PancakesCon, what would the second half of your talk be, the hobby portion of the talk?
That's a really good question. I mean, obviously I'm wearing a D&D t-shirt, so we could always talk about RPGs. I am a hack of a golfer, so we could talk golf. Anything Star Wars related, right? I know it's kind of blurred behind me, but I've got a wall of lightsabers hanging up behind me. So, yeah, we could pick either one of those and go in all in on it. It's all good.
Looks like you and Leslie are going to be best friends now.
Living room. You can go on my Instagram and see my Star Wars living room with also a wall of lightsabers. So,
see.
Yep.
Oh. So, Jake?
I mean, you and I talk about lifting a lot, and I've been doing it for, 13 years now at this point? And, that's probably the thing that I could just riff on for a while. But, cooking, just cooking for your family, I don't come up with my own recipes, but I really just enjoy being in the kitchen and kind of just getting into the groove, getting three or four things going at the same time, and producing a thing that everybody wolfs down in 10 minutes. There's something very, very zen that I really like about that. So
I could talk about breakfast. Ooh. For 30 minutes, easy. Yeah, breakfast is delicious. Leslie, what was yours, or what would yours be?
I am a fourth degree black belt in Tangsudo and Taekwondo. I've been doing that for quite a long time. I teach small kids in the evening. That's how I spend every evening during the week. And I also study Eskrima and Kung Fu. So I'm very, very, very into traditional martial arts.
Awesome.
Do not piss off Leslie.
I wish I was a badass. I'll never be a badass, but I enjoy teaching the kids. It's an important life skill. Knowing how to throw a punch is an important life skill. So
being able to control your body. Yes. I know that when I was a kid, I'm out running around and doing things all the time, and I learned how to control my body at that time. And yeah, a lot of that has been lost. And so doing a thing like that, martial art, I think super important.
I've thought about getting my son into that. He's six, so.
Yeah, what's the youngest age you should get a kid into a martial art, I guess, is a good question.
That every kid should definitely get into martial arts, but you have to be selective of the school that you send your kid to. That's an important part. Finding the right instructor, finding the right martial arts, finding a healthy environment for them to learn in is really, really important. But there's a martial art for everybody, depending on, their age and their physical ability and what they want to learn and why they want to learn it. There is a martial art for everybody out there.
So stay away from the MMA gym is what you're telling.
Really? I mean, I'm sure there's good MMA gyms. I'm not going to be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. No. I mean, again, it depends on what you want to learn and the instructors and the positivity of the environment, the discipline they teach you. And again, the basic things like the fundamentals and control of the body that they teach you. Those are the things that resonate with young people, especially, but with everybody.
Sure. Awesome.
Excellent. Sorry, just word vomit came out for a second. Let's do the quick wins, and then we can close up. So I'll start, since I've been thinking about mine. And so my win of the week is that this past Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
I'm pretty
psyched about that. They're a team I root for, therefore they win, I win.
I gotcha. Okay.
And I don't want to get too terribly political or anything about it, but there was, during the parade, unfortunately, there was a mass shooting that occurred. So it's kind of a little bit of a sour point.
Oh, no.
And Jake has not heard of this. That was on Wednesday. There was one person was killed after the parade, and I think it was up to 22 people injured. Some of them were children, so that breaks my heart.
Yeah, I was mortified. So my mom and sister were just here in town. Then they're from Kansas City, and they flew back home. And my sister's plan, like, she booked, talk about having faith in your team. She booked a hotel on the parade route last year for this year's parade route. And she was all set to go hang out at the parade. And I still don't know what made her not go, but I was terrified, like absolutely terrified that she had been, you know, kind of in the area where that shooting took place. But for whatever reason, she decided to stay off the parade route instead. So I was thrilled about that.
So, sorry, Jake, why don't you go get us back on track?
Two things. Number one, accepted to three different conferences to speak this week. I'm only able to accept two, but always makes me feel good. Number two, I saw the numbers 2 and 4 at the beginning of my weight when I weighed in for the first time in like 8-9 months, maybe more. So I didn't think that I was moving around more when I was at my old job and actually had to like go to work and like go visit people at their desks and stuff, but apparently I was. And being here in this office and not really leaving really did cut down on the amount of activity that I was doing. And so, yeah, kind of put on, calling it the Trimark 25, or more. And so been working on that since January and, yeah, coming back down. So yeah, those are my wins. Leslie, what do you have?
I think that most of the difficult planning for PancakesCon is done now. There's a lot of parts where I just don't have enough spoon because I have to do it all myself. And, you know, sometimes I just don't want to sit there and update the website or update a spreadsheet or coordinate people. And I think that at this point, if I won the lottery or got hit by a bus, I like to say the positive one first, the con would run okay at this point. So I feel pretty good about getting over that hurdle.
Excellent.
That's fantastic.
And I guess we'll close with Lakeith. You got one?
Man, just being upright. My second bout with COVID. It's been a rough week. Feeling pretty human as of Friday afternoon. So we're just going to say that getting to the end of the week and being in my chair working is a win right now. So
it's sometimes all it takes, right?
The bar is low, but here we are.
Being able to sleep. That's got to help.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to send us off and we'll play a little bit more of the Calvin Harris Slow Acid track. Hacks for Pancakes. Leslie, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. I appreciate it. It's been fantastic.
Thanks for having me. It was fun. It was so fun. Thank you.
Oh, Jake. You got to figure out a way to get that under control, man. All right. Until next week, everybody. We will see y'all. Stay safe. And have a good time.
Later, y'all.